Let There Be Light. From Flashbangs and Frag Grenades. By Calchexis. Read by Sam Gabriel. Based on League of Legends by Riot Games. Chapter 25. Sungate. Rigo flipped a knife over and over in his hand. Behind him, hundreds of Glasgowi wardsmen, backed up by hundreds more of Grime's ragged throng, bristled. In front of them was a large, defunct freight hatch for the Sungate. According to Jinx, the freight hatches had been built as in-and-outs for the workers during the Sungate's construction. After that, they had been used for improvements and renovations, but otherwise never saw use. The last time they opened was for the Hextech retrofit almost 15 years ago. Then they were locked, sealed, and promptly fucking forgotten about. At least the Pilties had forgotten. They were good at that, though. They were good at forgetting that every time they needed hard labor, they had to crack open a door to the Undercity and scoop up a few thousand laborers from the trench. Gods and aspects forbid they do their own heavy lifting for once. After that, though, the hatches had been sealed, and most of the tunnels leading to them had been collapsed. Most of them. Some tunnels couldn't be collapsed, though. Some of them were too valuable or too sturdy to take out without compromising the integrity of the chasm wall and possibly damaging the Sungate itself, but that wasn't anything for them to worry about, right? Rigo grinned viciously as he palmed his blade open. After all, the tunnels were a damn maze with all the collapses and security nets. Why, you'd need a damn map to get to the hatch from anywhere in Zaun proper. Rigo checked the synchronized watch that Jinx had given to everyone leading a group. The timer was ticking down, and he looked back over his shoulder to the bloodthirsty mob behind him as he said, 2 minutes. Rana watched the timer pass the 2-minute mark, looked up at her mob, and gave them a vicious grin. A third of them were mercs from across the face of Runeterra, Freljordi clan exiles, Bilgewater cutthroats, and plenty of good old-fashioned Zaunite slashers. And the other 2/3 were throng. This wasn't an army exactly, but it would get the job done. She divided up control of the throng to the different merc crews, drilled them for a few weeks, and called it good. Most likely there would be a lot of deaths, but hopefully this way there would be marginally fewer. The freight hatch she was in front of looked like it hadn't moved any time in the last decade, and if it had been anyone else but Jinx telling her she was going to be walking through it in less than 2 minutes, then Rana might not have bought it. Jinx, though. Jinx had a knack for opening doors. 2 minutes. 2 minutes. Seraphine watched the counter tick down, with every tick matching the thundering beat of her heart. A huge mothball loading dock was their entrance. It was low and closer to the gray than most of the other entrances, but this close to the Sungate, the filters made the air at least marginally breathable.
Stay back,
Renata said as she laid a hand on Seraphine's shoulder.
Let the soldiers do their work.
If I'm going to be here, then I'm going to be a part of this, Seraphine replied sternly, looking up at Renata.
And if you get taken down by a stray carbine shot, what do you think that will do to morale?
Renata eyed her flatly, and Seraphine wilted back. It wasn't that Renata was wrong, which rankled. She loathed the idea of people dying for her, but she wanted even less to be a burden.
My magic can't help much from the back line. Seraphine said. The best I can do is raise spirits. That won't protect against bullets.
That's what flak armor is for,
Renata replied blithely.
You know what I mean.
Seraphine crossed her arms and frowned. All around it was probably more like a pout. It wasn't her fault that her face was shaped that way, though.
I just want to help.
With a soft sigh, Renata removed her filter mask, leaned down, and brushed her lips gently against Seraphine's, who returned the kiss a little more eagerly. As Renata drew back, though, there was a soft click, and Seraphine looked down to find a necklace with a fine silver chain and something heavy hanging from it. Stepping back, Seraphine brought the object into the wan light of one of the nearby flickering chem lamps and let out a small gasp. It was a ring. A thick, heavy golden ring, clearly made for a more masculine hand.
Someone paid my mother with this ring many years ago. And she could have gotten quite a lot for it had she sold it.
Renata said quietly as she closed her hands over Seraphine's.
But she didn't. Instead, she gave it to my father because she thought it was romantic.
Your father? Seraphine looked up at Renata, her eyes wet. Are you sure?
I have little left from my life before, but I am not given to sentiment.
Renata said as she ran her thumb over Seraphine's much smaller knuckles.
I kept that ring both as a reminder of my mother's foolishness and of how little it meant in the end, but now I believe I understand her a little better.
She closed her fist a little more tightly, which caused Seraphine to close her grip fully around the ring.
I have no heart left to give you, my dear, but I have a ring and a promise, and a given truth that I could not bear to lose you, and I hope that it is enough.
It's more than enough, Seraphine whispered as she brought their joined hands up to her lips and pressed her lips to Renata's scarred fingers as the timer began its final countdown.
In the depths of the gray where nothing natural could live, monsters reigned supreme.
They trudged through the shadows and the illimitable darkness of those low spaces like a parade of horrors. At the head of that parade was a massive, hunched figure, a great mass of lupine muscle, bristling with chemtech augmentations, and the twisted, mad things that followed behind him did so with an eerie calm. Their handlers were there too, in their full hazmat gear with their 3-meter-long shock prods. They were hardly needed. Smeech's abominations had long since lacked anything mortal left in their abused bodies. But like recognized like, monsters recognized monsters, and monsters always deferred to the greatest among them. Warwick, the Wrath of Zaun, was just such a monster. They followed him because they knew him, because they understood him, and because he understood them. Where he went, they would follow, because no matter how devastated their minds were, they still, even if only in an intrinsic way, all sought the same thing. Death. That was why they followed Warwick to the base of the Great Eastern Sun Gate. That was why they waited patiently at the mouth of an enormous, disused sluice. They obeyed and waited in forbearing silence because they knew that death awaited them beyond. Warwick turned his wrist to look down at the ticking timer that Jinx had affixed to it. It was encased in thick, chem-treated glass to endure the atmosphere of the gray, and even that was so pitted that he could barely make out the symbols. He could tell how many digits there were, though, and he knew it was ticking down and down and down. Soon, Jinx would trigger the hard reset of the Sun Gate's preliminary systems, and all of the forgotten holes in their defenses would clatter open for a brief moment before it automatically resealed the defunct areas. They would have moments and only moments, but Warwick intended to make sure that moments was all they needed. Tick-tock, tick-tock, tick. Lux tapped her finger in a nonsense pattern against the diamond ring in her palm as she looked down on the Sun Gate from her vantage point near the top of the chasm. There was a length of pipework that went nearly to the surface and terminated almost 10 meters above the crenellated span of the fissure's mouth atop the Sun Gate's surface. The walkway was more like a boulevard, wide enough for 3 carriages to run abreast, and it bristled with emplaced Hextech cannons and hundreds of Sun Gate security along with at least that number in reinforcing cadre. They were watching for anything and everything, making it even funnier that they couldn't see the next part coming. Piltover, as a point of habit, habitually underestimated Zaunite ingenuity, but how could they not? Their entire war was predicated on Zaun being inferior, and the only way to maintain that illusion was to constantly underestimate them. In fairness, there wasn't a person alive who could accurately estimate what Jinx was capable of, and in Piltover's defense, even she couldn't have foreseen Jinx's maps. The pipes and sewers were a deadly labyrinth, and, till now, even the Zaunites had avoided them. The maps represented more than just a tactical advantage. Jinx's maps were a full-on paradigm shift. With that said, this was a trick that would only work once. Camille was still operating under the illusion that her security systems were intact, and the pipes were unfit for travel, and after today, that would change. But oh, today would be such a day. You ready, crazy girl? Echo asked as he knelt beside her. Ready as I'll ever be, Lux replied. Behind them, every firelight that could work a hoverboard was mounting up. There was just under 100 of them, but they were also heavily burdened. That wasn't such a big deal, though, since they would be shedding most of that burden within moments of flight. Each firelight was assigned 1 Glasgowrie wardsman, while Lux had 4 that she could safely bring down with her, bringing their total to a neat 100 ground units, with solid air superiority from the firelights once they were unburdened.
"It's almost time,"
Echo said, holding out his ticking pocket watch. Lux closed her fists in a tight grip, her fingers blunting against the diamond focus as her stomach clenched. Jinx was down there in the belly of the beast, completely alone aside from their mole. Lux had managed to turn a few of the controllers along with a handful of maintenance crews. Some were Zonite-born, while others just lived on the slum-like borders between the cities and so were more sympathetic to Zon than to Piltover. She had promised them a home in Billowa, and those with families had already had them evacuated to Jinx's barony. Their people on the inside quite literally had nothing to lose.
3,
Echo counted down.
2.
Ready up! Lux hollered as she stood and splayed her fingers, spilling light around herself and her wardsmen.
1.
Ren stared sullenly out at the viewport of the Sungate's primary control chamber. The fishbowl lens afforded a wide, if slightly distorted, view of the harbor that stretched out into the Guardian Sea. She rocked back and forth on her heels, her arms crossed as she rattled her fingers against her elbow, while the 24 primary controllers went about their business. It wasn't even that she was looking forward to Progress Day. It was that she had been stationed in this fucking gate for a fucking month, and the cafeteria food was really starting to get old. After the attack on the Foundry, she understood the need to lay low, but Lady Pharos had been gambling that the attack would provoke Zon into a reprisal of their own, directed at the Sungate, and first, Ren had been thrilled. The idea of taking control of one of the mighty Sungates with all of its defensive emplacements and soundly reducing an endless wave of trenchies to bloody paste as they threw themselves at various choke points like the savages they were sounded wonderful. Except nothing had changed. 1 week passed, and Ren told herself they were just gathering their strength and maybe even reeling from the bloody nose she'd given them at the Foundry. Then 2 weeks went by, and she started to grow concerned. 3 and then 4 weeks later, Ren was in a legendarily foul temper because it meant that, surprise, surprise, that Kem Baron bitch had either lied or been too stupid to know she'd been misled. That meant that the attack was almost certainly not at the Sungate, and was instead going to be somewhere in Piltover proper, probably at the Council Tower itself. That meant that she was stuck guarding a perfectly safe gate with 2 squads of her precious 105, while her beloved Lady Pharos was going to be fending off those waves of scum. If she were less disciplined, she would have left her post in the hands of one of her subordinates and gone to join Lady Pharos. The idea that she was missing out on the bliss of shedding so much Zonite blood alongside her love was making her blood boil. Those were the thoughts congealing in her mind when all the lights across the Sungate went black, the consoles went dark, and the primary controllers began shouting. "Shut up!" Ren snapped as the lights flickered back online, and all the consoles began their start sequences. "What happened? What was that?"
"I don't know."
The controller primary was a portly man by the name of Tillinger, and his soft, sweaty face was red as he stood up from his seat and began looking around at the slowly booting consoles. Ren stormed over to him, grabbed him by the lapels, and heaved him around to face her.
"Then speculate," she hissed through her teeth. It looked like a main system reset," Tillinger gasped out. "Like what we had to do when we swapped everything over from steam and mechanical power to the Hextech generators."
Ren's eyes widened. Then she let him go and spun around to press her finger to her compiece. "This is Commander Gleamspire to all Cadra. I need a report on the emplacements. Are the emplacements still active?" It didn't take long for her elite to get back to her. All across the board, it was the same story. The system reset had resulted in a momentary blackout and then a full reboot of the whole Sungate. Everything had run through automated protocols, opening and closing the gates to test them, but moreover...
"The emplacements are..."
Ren started, but didn't have a chance to finish the thought before the Sungate rocked with explosions and klaxons began blaring. Ren turned, grabbed Tillinger again, and shook the fat man like a rag doll as she bellowed,
"How?" "I don't know," Tillinger cried. "I don't even know how to do it. It could only be done from a control console."
Ren's fingers went loose, dropping the primary to the ground as she absorbed what he said. "It could only be done from a control console?" Then that meant that Ren whipped away and put her finger back to her earpiece. This is Gleamspire. We're betrayed. All units on all levels, brace for combat! It was telling that the windows of the Piltover Council Room were all armor-plated glass, and it said more that they were reinforced with subtle but powerful Hextech barriers connected directly to the mains of the Hexgate's own power grid so as to never need to be deactivated. Jace thought about it often, although probably not as often as his companion, considering what had happened to the last set of windows. "This'll be the first time I've given a Progress Day speech from behind a screen," Jace said as he adjusted his cravat. "It's only for this year," Mel said. There was a faint click at the end of all of her sentences. Fully half of her body was burned away in Jinx's first attack a decade ago, and the rebuild had left just as many marks as the near-death experience. "We can't be too careful, after all." Jace sighed as he dropped his hands away from his clothes. He was just fiddling with them, if he was being fully honest. He looked fine. The man that stared back at him from the reflection in the windows was one of perfectly kept grandeur. He was Jace Talis, the man of tomorrow, and the face of progress itself. He was the polished figurehead of the council who, lately, had been able to do little more than smile and wave as every attempt he made to de-escalate tensions with Zaun was met with an overruling majority from the council that he was ostensibly the head of. There were days he wished they would just oust him, the way he had done to his own mentor all those years ago. "Camille's report suggested an attack on the Sungate, didn't it?" Jace said as he turned to face Mel. The right side of her face remained as stoic and beatific as the day he had forged it for her, but her left side, the side that was still human, gave a thin smile out of what was left of her lips. "The report came from a half-dead Zornite Kembaron desperate to satisfy us," she replied. Maybe the information was valid at the time, but if they were going to attack the Sungate, they ought to have done it a month ago, if not more. The Cadre has it reinforced with 3 times the usual security. "Ah, yes, the Cadre," Jace muttered. Mel sighed. "I know you still believe in the old ethos of non-violence, Jace," she said gently, "but ideals must find a compromise with reality. We need an army to push back against Zaun." "Maybe if we had been a little better about upholding the ethos in the first place," Jace shot back, "we wouldn't be in this position." Mel's hand, her human hand, came up to brush over Jace's face, and he caught it in his grip. It had been a long time since they'd been that close, and the actions of the council that had more and more been led by Mel and her new cronies through the background support of Clan Pharos had only driven them further apart. He wished he could still see the woman she had been, the fiery, determined woman who had willingly defied Piltover and Noxus for her own ambitions. That woman had, he suspected, died in Jinx's first strike. Now the only thing left was fear and anger. It had taken him too long to realize the truth, but everything had become starkly clear when he had. Mel was afraid. Maybe she was right to be. Frankly, Jace was too tired to be afraid. He felt twice his age sometimes, and what little patience he had for council politics had withered over the past few months, as he saw everything he loved about Piltover be fed into the fires of industry. And all for the sake of progress. It wasn't progress, though. Progress moved forward. But all Jace could see was the old hag at the top of Clan Pharos desperately dragging their city back into a darker age. "It won't be like this forever," Mel said, taking his hand in both of hers. "It will be if we let it," Jace replied firmly. "And that's exactly what we're doing." "You're acting childish," Mel said with a scowl. "This isn't about just you and I. This isn't about grudges or ideals. This is about survival." She turned to glare out the window toward the dark scar of Zaun. "Whatever it was we could have done or should have done, and I don't disagree that things could have been done better. That's not the reality we live in. This reality is one where we are on the cusp of war. And Zaun very much wants us dead, and since there have been no attacks till today, it's most likely they were waiting. And the most likely target of all is us." The sun was almost at its apex, and that meant it was almost time to give his speech. He had 2, in fact, but he hadn't decided which he would use. One was vetted and approved by the council and clan, while the other had been written over the course of the whiskey-soaked night prior and was definitely not council vetted and approved. It would also probably lead to his expulsion from the council by popular demand, and Jace was seriously considering using it for that fact alone. More than that, though, he wanted to be honest. He had spent the last 10 years dealing in half-truths, and now he wanted to speak his mind. He wanted to tell all of Piltover exactly what he thought of the Khadra and of the war with Zaun and all the propaganda-driven hatred filling the streets, along with the sewage that they could have cleaned up weeks ago if their resources weren't being diverted to pump out more aspects. Damned Khadra. "Ready?" Mel asked. Jace reached into his vest pocket and drew out the speech that would get him unseated. "Yes," he said quietly. "I think I..." Klaxon split the air and Jace turned sharply, getting an arm around Mel and dragging her away from the window by reflex as the heavy metal shutters started ratcheting down. "What is it?" Jace roared as the door to the council chambers burst open. Camille Pharos emerged from the shadows like a blade from its sheath, her hextech eyes flicking to and fro as she examined the room while behind her a half-dozen Khadra elite cleared every possible entry point. "Camille!" Mel spat as she stood up and shrugged Jace off of her. "What's going on?" "A suicide attack," Camille replied, frowning as she walked back over to the windows, made a dismissive gesture, and one of the sets of armored shutters rose up to allow vision of the city. "Jinx," she muttered. "What could you possibly be planning?" Mel moved to her side and scowled up at the matriarch of Clan Pharos. "Camille, you will explain."
"Zaun is attacking the Eastern Sungate," Camille said, her brow still furrowed. "But I cannot see a path to victory for them, so why? Damage? Assassination? But who?"
"Is it possible they could disable the Sungate?" Jace asked, moving to Camille's other side.
"Possible, but not likely. But even if they could, it wouldn't matter. We still have the hex gates, and any damage could be repaired."
She tapped a finger against her chest, right over where her heart might once have been, then shook her head.
"Now this is rank idiocy," she said contemptuously. "This is an untamed hound biting at the wheel of a passing carriage. It must be they—"
"Lady Pharos!" One of the Khadra soldiers she'd brought with her dropped to a knee before the three of them.
"What report from the gate?"
she asked sharply. "The report says—" To Jace's surprise, the Khadraman actually hesitated before saying, "It says they're already inside."
The text of this story is available on AO3. Music by Dot Matrix. If you would like me to record a story, voice over a character, get in touch using the contact information available on my website, which is located at samgabrielvo.com. And there you can find other stories that I've read, as well as a link to my Discord server, where I record things live for your enjoyment. And finally, as always, thank you for listening.